Death and the Dancing Footman by Niall Marsh. Dramatized for radio by Alan Downer. With Nigel Graham as Chief Detective Inspector Roderick Alleyne, Lawrence Payne as Jonathan Royal, and Stephen Pacey as Aubrey Mandrake. Death and the Dancing Footman.
Yes, my dear.
Do switch off the wireless. I'm painting the rector's lower lip, and all that gloom is making his mouth droop at the corners.
Ah, sorry, Troy.
Yes, I think I've heard enough. And if the rector doesn't mind.
Uh-huh.
Right, then. Just look at that snow. We won't be able to stir from the house in this, that's if it keeps up.
It's an ill wind. You said you wanted a quiet holiday.
I'm afraid it will keep up. The sky looks full of it. Oh, Troy, I'm so sorry.
That's all right, Rector. The portrait's finished.
Oh, is it? May I look?
You do.
Oh, my word.
Do you like it?
It's quite splendid. And most flattering.
Roddy?
Hmm? Oh, yes, I like it very much. Hello, what's that?
What's what?
A car struggling outside in the church lane.
Really? Oh, good heavens. Whoever it is must have taken leave of his senses. They've cleared the lane as far as the first turning. After that, it's thick snow.
Look, it stops at your gate, Rector.
Oh, Jimmy.
Man's got out.
He's coming this way.
Well, it can't be for me anyway. Nobody knows I'm here.
He's in a great hurry, whoever he is.
The car's driven away.
Oh, he's seen us. He's coming towards this window. Excuse me. I'd better let him in, I suppose.
What is going on? Oh, it's a playwright, Roddy. Aubrey Mandrake. You remember?
Oh, the chap with the gammy leg. Yes, so it is.
He looks worried. There must be something wrong.
Alleyne, thank God you're here.
Mandrake.
Mrs. Alleyne.
Hello.
Rector. I'm Aubrey Mandrake. How do you do?
Indeed.
Look, I'm so sorry to disturb you like this.
Not at all.
We've just driven over from Highford.
Ah, you're staying with Jonathan Royal.
Yes. He's giving a weekend party. And I'm afraid everything's gone wrong.
Wrong? How?
There's been the most appalling tragedy. Alleyne, we've come to ask for your help.
You detestable young man. How did you know I was here?
Word gets round quickly in these parts. You know how it is.
Only too well.
It's a case of murder.
Oh.
What?
Murder? Oh, dear. But who?
You may know the Compline family, Rector.
Oh, they live over at Penfelton. Yes, it's a little outside my parish, but it's not Mrs. Compline, surely. Oh, she's a most kind and generous lady.
No, it's one of her sons.
Oh,
but now she's desperately ill. She's taken an overdose of Veronal. Alleyne, if we don't get back to Highfold quickly...
Mandrake, it's really none of my business. You must telephone the chief constable.
We've tried. The wire's overclouded, folded down.
And with your permission, Rector, I'll try from here.
I'm afraid you won't get through. We're Great Chipping's miles to the north. And
I'll get through even if I have to wade to Great Chipping.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Alleyne. I can see he's not very happy about all this.
Not really. He was hoping for a quiet week's holiday.
I'm afraid there simply wasn't anything else we could do.
He'll do his stuff, I expect, if asked by the local police. CI people don't, as a rule, just nip in and take a case wherever they happen to be.
Red tape. Murderers can ramp about country houses. Women can take overdoses of Veronal.
Oh, poor Mrs. Compline.
I drive through snow and ice to bring help and effect an arrest, and then at the last, everything gets bogged down in red tape.
Oh, I doubt if it'll be quite as bad as that.
Well, then give me Whitehall 1212.
If you'll excuse me, I'll pack my husband's bag.
You think he'll come?
Oh, yes. He'll come.
Extension 369, please, and quickly.
Oh, my dear Mr. Mandrake, please forgive me. Sit down. You must be exhausted.
Thank you. The roads are a nightmare. We've been driving since breakfast.
A drink?
Oh, whiskey, please, if you have it.
Oh, of course. And you must stay for lunch.
Oh, you're very kind, Rector, but there simply isn't time. Miss Wynne will be returning shortly from the chemist's. We were given a list of items to get for Mrs. Compline. All very urgently needed.
Miss Wynne?
Yes, another of Jonathan Royal's house guests. She very pluckily accompanied me on the journey over. She and James Bewling, one of the gardeners at Highfold.
Oh, yes.
He came in case we had to dig ourselves out. Fortunately, his services were not required. The roads are just about passable, so far. No sign of it letting up, though.
Packed lunches, then, for four, eh? You can eat them in the car. Oh, your whiskey.
Oh, thank you. Most kind.
Okay, goodbye.
Elaine, what news?
I couldn't get through to Great Chipping, as you predicted. But I've spoken to Scotland Yard, and they'll get hold of a doctor, commandeer a car, and ginger up a road-clearing gang. And my colleague, Inspector Fox, will come up by train.
Excellent.
Also, I've rung my atrocious superior, and he's all for my taking over the case, blast his eyes. So, there's nothing for it but to go. At least I've got my camera. I'll phone the local chemist for iodine and whatnot.
Well, he can give it to Clarice, Miss Wynne, if she's still there.
Ah, yes, why not? I'll phone through straight away.
I found some things into a bag for you, Roddy. Pajamas, dressing gown, shaving things.
Good. And can you let me have a soft brush and some scissors and some bits of charcoal?
Of course. I'll look them out for you.
The rest, I'll have to trust Brer Fox and Co. getting through by train.
Well, swathe yourselves in sweaters and topcoats. Looks like the snow's getting heavier.
It's a bit slippery, I'm afraid. Car tends to slide about, even with the chains.
It's much worse than on the way over.
What are the prospects, Bewling?
She'll be fair enough as far as village and a good piece below. That's when she do turn in and up, if you take my meaning, sir.
Yes, yes.
As us run into
this camper looks inviting. Anybody hungry?
No, thank you.
All right. In that case, we'll open it at our first breakdown. If the others overhear me saying that, I dare say they won't let us have a breakdown so that they can collar the lunch.
The others, Miss Wick?
Yes, well, you know. They're the ones that leave nails and broken glass in the road.
And they hide
things when you're in a hurry. They've only got one arm and one leg each, so they take single gloves and stockings.
Oh, my God, Clarice, are you being whimsical?
You pretend not to be interested, Aubrey, but you, being a writer, I bet they take the top of your fountain pen often enough. And I bet they even get into Scotland Yard, eh, Mr. Aubrey?
Oh, do they not indeed? Little Mansbury.
Yes. You want the details, don't you? Poor chap, embarking on all this without knowing the full facts. Goes far beyond the call of duty.
Policeman's lot, is it, Lieutenant?
Quite. Well, I'll start at the beginning.
Yes, do.
Jonathan Royal.
A millionaire.
Yes. He's a friend, sort of. And he invited me to his house for the weekend and asked me, if possible, to arrive on Thursday evening in advance of his other guests.
Mm-hmm.
I got there at about 5:30. Royal was waiting for me in the library.
Mr. Mandrake, sir?
Come in, Aubrey. Come in.
Jonathan.
Oh, what an incredible night. Harpies and warlocks abroad. Most stimulating.
There's a gale blowing down from the north.
And it's tossed your hair into elf locks. Or did you do that yourself?
I had the driving window down.
You look like a character out of one of your own plays.
Oh, God.
You always say that when somebody talks about your writing. Does it imply modesty or desperate aesthetic power?
Oh, I don't know about
that. No matter. I cannot allow your muse to claim you this evening, because for tonight, yes, and for tomorrow and the next day, I shall be the creator and you the audience.
What are you plotting?
Oh, yes. Plotting, that's the word. My dear, I am up to the ears in conspiracy. Draw up a chair to the fire and I'll tell you all about it.
Very well.
Would you say, I wonder, that I have a sense of the dramatic?
Depends what you mean by dramatic.
I maintain that I have. In the ordinary, unclassy sense. But you see in me, my dear Aubrey, the unsatisfied and inarticulate artist. Temperament and no art, that's me. Or so I thought until I got my idea.
Your idea?
It suddenly came to me. I'm a ninny with ink and paper and brush and canvas and all the rest of it, but there's one medium I've never tried.
And what could that wonderful medium be?
Flesh and blood.
What?
Flesh and blood.
Don't tell me you're going in for social welfare.
Wait a bit. It came to me that human beings could, with a little judicious arrangement, be as carefully composed as the figures in a picture. One had only to confine them within the boundaries of a suitable canvas, and they would take on some sort of form. It seemed to me that, given the limitations of an imposed stage, some of my acquaintances would at once begin to act out an exciting drama.
And?
I decided that all I had to do was select the right ingredients, set my palette with human colors, and the picture would paint itself. I would summon my characters to the theater of my own house, and the drama would unfold.
I wish I knew what you were up to.
Oh, my dear fellow, I'm telling you. I have invited, for this weekend, 7 suitably selected characters. 7 characters with a sort of emotional, intellectual tension. An antagonism running like a connecting thread between them. Local people from my own corner of Dorset. Mm. And since I must have an audience, I've invited an 8th guest. Yourself.
If you expect me to break into a paean of enraptured gratitude, Jonathan,
Not just yet, perhaps. Let me first make you happily familiar with a dramatis personae. And to that end, I propose we ring for a sherry. You look a little anxious.
And my looks do scant justice to my feelings. I'm terrified.
Oh, you may have good cause. You shall judge of that when I've finished. The first characters to make their unconscious entrances on our stage are the mother and 2 sons. Mrs. Sandra Compline, William and Nicholas Compline. The lady is a widow and lives at Penfelton, a charming house just outside Cloudyfold Village.
Ah.
The Complines are an old Dorset family and have been neighbours of ours for many generations. Her husband was my contemporary.
How did he die?
Used to hunt. Came a cropper, fell off his horse and broke his neck.
Oh.
Compline was a rackety, handsome fellow, more popular with the women than the men. But he had his own set in London, and a very fast set it was. Don't know where he met Sandra, but I'm afraid it was an ill-omened encounter for her. Poor thing. I suppose he fell in love with her looks. She was a very pretty creature then.
Go on.
When they'd been married about 8 years and had these 2 sons, Sandra wearied of the kind of treatment she'd had to put up with from her husband and went to stay abroad. And I suppose with the idea of winning him back, she had something done to her face.
What sort of something?
Plastic surgery.
My God.
And 20 years ago, they weren't so good at it as they are nowadays. Anyway, the chap she consulted bolstered her face up with wax. And the wax slipped. Disastrous. This left her looking quite lopsided, with a sort of comical look.
Awful.
For a long time, she wouldn't go out. Or receive anyone, even attempted suicide.
Poor woman.
Yes. Ah, Caper, we'll take sherry now, please.
Very good, sir.
Oh, and Caper.
Sir?
Mr. Nicholas Compline is definitely coming tomorrow. He may have the blue room. Tell Mrs. Polting, will you?
Yes, sir. Excuse me, sir. That makes 8 guests for the weekend?
Yes. Mrs. Compline, Mr. Nicholas and Mr. William Compline, Dr. Francis Hart, Madame Lisa, Miss Wynne, Lady Hersey Amblington, and, of course, Mr. Mandrake. 8. Mr. Mandrake tonight and the rest for dinner tomorrow. We'll have the Heitzik 28 and the Courvoisier.
Very good, sir.
You do take sherry, Aubrey, don't you?
Please.
Yeah, 2 sherries, Caper.
Yes.
I'm particularly anxious about the dinner tomorrow, Caper. There must be a feeling of festivity, of anticipation. Large fires in the bedroom. I've ordered flowers, something quite extra. I've told Mrs. Pouting, but your department. Ginger up the new footman. And the maids, you know what I mean?
Certainly, sir. I'm sure everything will be quite satisfactory.
Good, good.
Sherry, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Caper.
Thank you.
That'll be all for now.
Thank you, sir.
Your very good health.
And yours.
Well, let's go on.
Yes.
Sandra was left, as I said, with 2 small sons, William and Nicholas.
Right.
And gradually she seemed to take heart. Life at Penfelton returned to normal. William, the elder boy, was a quiet sort of chap. Plain. Oh, humdrum fellow. He was described once quite aptly, I thought, as an unsuccessful drawing of a fine subject. He's a bit of an enigma. Devoted to his mother. Watches over her like an old nanny. As a boy of 7, he was found by his nurse in a hysterical frenzy when his mother returned home after her operation. Remarkable in such a really rather commonplace boy. Oh, he's just odd. Nothing wrong, of course, really. But he's done very well so far in this war. But I sometimes wonder...
You don't like him, do you?
Oh, rubbish. He's merely rather difficult to describe, that's all. But Nicholas. Nicholas is his father all over again. Damn good-looking young blade. Charm, gaiety, dash, all the rest of it. Complete egoist. Bit of a showman, born with an eye for a lovely lady. He's, 29 now, and William's 32.
Right.
William's home on leave at the moment. Leave, as they say, rush straight home to mother. Nicholas uses Penfelton like a hotel, and his mother is the proprietor, so consequently, he's her favorite. She spoiled him from the day he was born. If she could cut William out of the entail, I promise you she'd do it. But she can do nothing. So William comes in for the whole packet, and Nick must send for himself.
Do they get on well, the brothers?
Oh, they haven't met for some time.
Ah.
William's regiment's been at the front. Nick, having been declared delicate by his mother, has been wangled some departmental job in Great Chipping. Wears a uniform. Looks damn smart in it. But no, they don't get on well. Remember the necessary element of antagonism, Aubrey.
Mm.
William is engaged to Nick's ex-fiancée.
Ah, well done, William.
Which brings me to the next of my characters, the ingenue, in fact. Miss Cloris Wynne, one of the white-haired kind.
Platinum blonde.
Oh, the colour of light chablis. And done up in plaster like sausages. She will arrive with William and his mamma, who detests her.
And Nicholas scorned her.
Yeah, it isn't quite like that. Being in the habit of having his cake and eating it, he did not allow his engagement to cramp his style as an accomplished philanderer. In fact, he continued to philander with the fifth of our characters, Madame Lissac.
God.
Precisely. More in sorrow than in anger, it seems, Miss Cloris broke off the engagement, and after an interval so short, one suspects she acted on the ricochet.
Mm.
She accepted William, who had previously courted her and been cut out by his brother. Now, my private opinion, what's more, is that when William returns to the front, Nicholas is quite capable of recapturing the young lady, and I think she and William both know it. Relations, therefore, are strange.
Yes.
And I need not tell you that Mrs. Compline, William, and his betrothed do not know that I have invited Nicholas. Nor does he know that I have invited them. He does know, however, that I have invited Madame Lissac, which is why he has accepted.
Yes, tell me about her.
Oh, ambiguous, alluring, markedly a dasher, dark auburn hair, magnolia complexion, and eyes.
Mm.
Oh. Austrian originally and naturalized. A beauty specialist. She was among the earliest of our refugees. She has established a salon at Great Chipping, which did not please my distant cousin, Lady Hersey Amblington, who is also something of a beauty specialist.
And who I take it will also be arriving tomorrow evening.
Of course.
And the two are, of course, in competition.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Mm.
Not that Hersey has fewer customers now. They are simply not quite so smart. She refers to Madame Lissa as the pirate.
Really?
You haven't met Hersey.
No.
A distant cousin of mine, of whom I'm rather fond. A courageous and capable creature with her own somewhat direct methods of warfare. She is an old friend of the Compines and not at all delighted by Nicholas's attention to her rival. So she is linked up in an extremely satisfactory manner to both sides.
Hmm. And number 7?
Dr. Hart, the heavy of our play. Of Viennese extraction, though now also a naturalized Briton. He has been observed leaving Madame Lissa's flat at the most compromising hour, his hat drawn over his face.
I see.
He has also been observed to scowl most formidably at the mention of Nicholas Compline.
And he's a doctor?
A beauty specialist par excellence. The male of the species. Haven't you guessed Aubrey Dr. Hart's exact profession?
No.
He is a plastic surgeon.
I've always gauged Royal to be eccentric, but that was a lunatic thing to do.
And so I told him. I said, you've invited stark murder into your house.
Prophetic.
Yes, as things turned out.
What I don't understand is, why did they all stay? They were free to leave the stage.
Jonathan's a wonderful host. I suppose we decided to make the best of it. And then, of course, the snow...
I still can't see what he was trying to achieve.
He hoped the weekend would go some distance towards burying a little armory of hatchets.
Low gear, Dowser. This be deep bottom.
I know it is.
That's better. We'll be slushed out along, I reckon.
Okay, if we stick...
If we stick, Cloris, they can damn well produce a farm animal to lug us out the far side.
Yes, but...
It's dogging us, does it, miss? For a tidy 10 year and more, my old brother and me been telling master as how he did ought to put a digging
in the
old bridge across that there bottom, sir.
Yes.
Oh! It's all right, my dear. Just a little skid.
No. Pull over to your right, sir. Buy this here puddles and corner, or us will sink to our axles.
I'm doing my best. The wheels won't grip.
You're doing fine, sir. Now, do you keep to the right and rush her up?
I'm in a blasted pothole or something.
Keep her going, sir. Keep her going.
Damn you, crap. No.
Oh, we've stopped.
Oh,
let me out, sir. Let me out. You can listen to me, and don't stop engine for Glock's sake. Sharp me a minute. Don't he stare. I'll see.
What's he doing, Alain?
Well, I can only see his stern. He seems to be stuffing something under the back wheel.
Thank heaven he came with us.
I've never responded in the smallest degree to rustic charm, and James Bewling seems to me an extremely unconvincing piece of the genre.
Don't be beastly about him. He's very calm.
What does he mean by those ridiculous gestures?
I see. He wants us to go on.
Ah.
Oh, we're moving. He's done it.
Well, he can get in there.
Here he comes. Get in, James.
You all right, James?
Right as a trivet. I put a little bit of old sacket under the wheel.
I think we'll have lunch. I said we would after the first breakdown. The others can do without.
Right, since we seem to be safely on the move again, continue your story, madam.
Yes, of course. Well, on the Friday morning, Jonathan telephoned the Complines and invited them and Cloris to 4 o'clock tea.
So you're a playwright, Mr. Mandrake?
A poetic dramatist would be more accurate, William. A surrealist, even. Author of Saxophone in Tarleton, in which I was fortunate to invest a modest sum of money.
Which has reaped you but modest returns.
Indeed. Aubrey writes of sin and the occult, and most successfully, too.
I saw one of your plays, Mr. Mandrake.
Oh, God.
I'm surprised you got it past the Lord Chamberlain.
Well, the Lord Chamberlain doesn't know whether it's my dirty mind or his, so he says nothing. What do you do, Mr. Compline? I mean, what did you do before the war?
William has Penfelton to look after in peacetime.
Ah.
I paint pictures.
I see.
With very thick oil paint.
My younger son, Nicholas, is a soldier too. He did not, unfortunately, pass his medical for active service. It was a very bitter blow to him. You are not in khaki, Mr. Mandrake?
Aubrey is disabled, Sandra.
I see. My son Nicholas longs to be with his regiment in France, but...
Captain Nicholas Complain.
What?
Yes. Didn't you know, William? Nick's to be one of our party.
Jonathan, how kind of you to invite me.
It's good of you to come.
Mother?
Mm.
lovely to see you. You're looking absolutely radiant. I had no idea you were going to be here.
Hello, dear.
A pleasant surprise for you, Nicholas. And here are two more.
William? Clarice?
Hello there.
Hello. And how are you, William?
I'm well. Thank you.
Quite a family party.
How is life at Great Chipping?
Quite unbearable.
Are you still conducting the war?
Tea, Nicholas?
Please.
Oh, you must look after yourself, Nicholas. You know you've never been strong.
Yes, always delicate, wasn't he, Mother? That's why he had tutors and I was sent away to school.
Is your pool fit for bathing, Jonathan?
Yes, why? It's not exactly bathing weather.
Oh, I was thinking of a dip before breakfast tomorrow. Care to come for a nice bracing plunge with me, Clarice?
No, thank you, Nick.
It would have been awkward for you if Clarice had said yes.
Not at all.
I'll bet £10 that nothing on earth would have got you into that water before or after breakfast.
Would you? I'll take you. You've lost.
Oh, nonsense, William. I won't have it. Jonathan, please forbid these stupid boys to go on with this nonsense.
Me, my dear Sandra, I wouldn't dream of saying a word. Nicholas, you must help yourself to milk and sugar.
Jonathan, tell me, who to be your other guest?
Let me think. Lady Hersey Amblington, whom you know. Madame Lissa, whom you also know. I believe Nicholas knows her well.
Yes, we have met.
And a business colleague of hers, a Dr. Hart. I'm told he's quite charming. You'll meet them all later, cocktails. Dr. Hart hails originally from Vienna, I believe, and at times can be seen wearing a rather extravagant cloak.
Oh, I'd love to see
you. Oh, Mr. Mandrake, and have you and Jonathan planned this party together?
No. It's entirely Jonathan.
Then he's played a trick on all of us. Well, do you know, if I painted his picture, I should make him egg-shaped with quite a merry smile and a scorpion round his head.
Oh, dear.
And for eyes, the sort of windows you can't see through, clouded glass. His eyes are quite black, impenetrable.
It's his thick glasses.
No, is that it? I expect he's told you about Nicholas and Cloris and me.
Yes.
And about Nicholas and Madame Lissa.
That too.
Well, if Jonathan, or Nicholas for that matter, imagine I'm going to lose my temper, they're wrong.
I'm sure. If Jonathan has any ulterior motive, it's to effect a reconciliation.
Oh, no. That wouldn't be at all amusing. But I shan't do anything to Nicholas. Let him cool his ardour tomorrow in the swimming pool. After all, I've won. I've got Cloris, haven't I?
Poor William. Another sandwich, Aubrey?
Huh?
Or must you keep both hands on that steering
wheel? No, I think I can manage, thank you. It's not too bad just here where it's straight.
Well, now this year, be Pengidley. We're halfway there, but what's that over yet? A nasty stretch you'll be round down there hill.
Yes, good.
So
the party got off to a promising start.
If William's judgment was right, yes. And Royal's only aim was to make mischief.
Yes, of course it was.
Well, things were soon to get worse. When Madame Lissa arrived, Nicholas clearly decided to brazen it out and took up a proprietary position behind her.
And Dr. Hart?
Glared at them both.
He's quite a hateful man, with eyes like a lizard. I disliked him intensely at first sight.
On his arrival, he presented Jonathan with a Tyrolean cloak, the twin of the one he was wearing.
Mm.
For two pins, I think he'd have taken it back.
And Lady Hersey?
Took one look at Madame Lissa and turned scarlet.
Oh, you noticed?
I'm not quite blind, Aubrey. Nor yet half as silly as you think. And they sniped at each other all through dinner.
The surprising thing, though, well, surprising at the time, was Dr. Hart's reaction to Mrs. Complin.
And her to him.
How do you mean?
He couldn't take his eyes off her.
And she seemed to shrink inside herself and spoke only when she was spoken to.
And then only in monosyllables. Later, of course, one understood why.
Well, why?
Well, it transpired that Hart, then Dr. Franz Hartz of Vienna, had been the surgeon who had performed the operation on her face. She had been known to him as Mrs. Nicholas, so there's no doubt he recognized her. And though it was 25 years on, she knew him.
Hmm. What happened after dinner?
Well, over coffee, Jonathan became unusually loquacious, even for him, and launched into some dissertation about the nature of the individual.
You see, the reality of individuals is not absolute.
No one person is the same individual to more than one other person.
I don't quite understand.
Well, Madame Lisa, allow me to elaborate.
Must you, Jonathan?
Now, Hersey, this is my party. You must all humour me. Now, what I'm saying, Madame Lisa, is that each individual has as many exterior realities as the number of encounters he makes.
Excuse me.
Yes, Dr. Hart.
That is a pet theory of my own, in fact, that the actual he is known to nobody.
Does the actual he even exist?
Yes,
I still don't see what you mean.
Nor do I, William. One knows perfectly well how people will react to certain events.
But it is my contention that that is exactly what we don't know.
Well, we know that in a crisis, one man will keep his head, whereas another will go to pieces.
Exactly. Take the war. There are some men in my company.
Oh, no, William, not the war.
Oh, I agree, Sandra. Let us not draw our examples from the war. Let us imagine some unforeseen, hitherto unexperienced circumstances.
For example?
For example, that my new footman suddenly developed homicidal mania and was possessed of a lethal weapon.
Or that this was a Borgia party, and the champagne at dinner was poisoned, and we all had 10 minutes to live.
Oh, Nicky, what an outrageous idea.
Well, you'd be the first to go, Nicky, the amount you drank.
Will. And Francis would run him a close second. Wouldn't you, Francis? One might almost imagine you were trying to drown some secret sorrow.
You find that thought amusing, Conklin?
Dr. Hart, there is little that Madame Lisa says that I don't find completely charming. It is always a great pleasure to me to be in her company.
Oh, why, Nicholas?
May I return to my thesis?
Oh, Jonathan.
How, in some disastrous circumstances, does each of you believe I would behave? Sandra.
I think you would talk.
You say, and you, Madame Lisa?
Oh, forgive me, Mr. Royal. I do not know you all that well, but I think you would lose your temper.
Nick,
I think you might be rather flattened out.
William.
Well, I don't know. You might go mad, I suppose.
I believe you'd enjoy yourself.
I agree, Lady Hersey. I think you would be enormously interested in the behavior of your guests.
You see, so many Jonathan Royals.
And then afterwards, we played a word game, Charter.
Hmm? It's a sort of crossword game. Letters are drawn one by one from a pack of cards, and points awarded for the longest words.
I marked Aubrey's card. He had extract. 7 points.
Luck. Anyway, I marked Williams. He hadn't completed a word at all. Just done a little drawing of a strutting rooster, which bore a strong resemblance to Nicholas. He was marking Hart's card.
They'd both been drinking heavily at dinner.
And suddenly he said, "You've given me 2 forms," and turned quite pale. "A stupid mistake," said Hart. "I must have torn them off the block at the same time." Then the moment passed.
Why should Nicholas turn pale?
The same thought occurred to me. So I went back down to the library after midnight to see if I could find the 2nd form.
Aubrey, you didn't.
Well, there's no shame in looking at a discarded paper from a round game, Clarice.
Did you find it?
Yes.
Was anything written on it?
Yes. 5 words. "You are warned. Keep off."
I see.
I remember thinking, I'll bet Nicholas locks his bedroom door tonight.
And the following morning?
Was the morning of the bet.
He wasn't forgotten?
No, hardly. William brought up the topic at breakfast, and Nicholas seemed keen to go through with it. So we all agreed to meet at the pool, except for Madame Lisa, who was still in bed. It was freezing cold, with a layer of crisp snow on the lawns. Nicholas grabbed one of the 2 cloaks, Jonathan's or Hart's, from the cloakroom, and threw me the other. Then he dashed off to the pavilion to change. I decided not to wait for the others, but made my own way down to the pool. I don't much like people having to check their steps to my limp. I reached the poolside, and then... As I sank, I remember thinking, this is really bad. And water rushed into my nose and ears. My boots seemed to weigh a ton, and my arms were caught in the wretched cloak. My lungs were bursting, and my body was dying of cold. Then I thought, You'll die if you don't swim. So I kicked out and struggled to the surface.
Are you all right? Catch hold of this.
I found myself choking into the face of a monstrous bird.
That's right. Now take out. This way.
The rail, Mandrake. There's a rail here. Get hold of it. Come on. You're all right now. Up you come. Up.
Come on, old chap. How the devil did it happen?
But that is my cloak.
The edge is terribly slippery. I nearly fell in myself.
I didn't fall. I was pushed.
My dear fellow, we must get you into the house at once.
Yes, we should get him inside quickly. A hot bath. Can you walk, Mr. Mandrake?
Yes.
Your arm across my shoulders. Come on. Perhaps, Mr. Compline, you would be good enough to retrieve my cape.
Sorry, Hart. I can't swim, as you well know.
We'll fish it out somehow. Take Mr. Mandrake in, please, and get him into bed.
I tell you, I was pushed, Jonathan.
Lie still and take another sip of this, Aubrey, please.
Somebody came up behind me and thrust me forward.
But, my dear...
Indeed, I can still feel the impact of their hands. I was deliberately thrown into that water.
Nicholas saw nobody when he came out of the pavilion.
No, exactly. By that time, whoever it was had hidden himself.
But we should have seen him.
Hart and William Compline were already there when you arrived.
Yes, and Miss Wynne.
Did they walk down to the pool together?
I think not. Hart came through the front door, past the pavilion, and William by the west door. I don't know about Miss Wynne.
The question is, which one of them arrived first?
Try and go to sleep.
I don't in the least want to go to sleep, Jonathan. And don't, I implore you, look as though I was mentally unhinged.
Well, you have had a shock.
Jonathan, somebody tried to drown me in your loathsome pond, and I confess I should like to know who it was.
A thoughtless piece of foolery, perhaps.
Does anyone but a moron play that kind of prank on a cripple? But somebody must have seen it.
Come in. Ah, Nicholas.
Look here, I hope you don't mind my butting in.
No, not at all. I gather it was you who saved my life by throwing me that inflated India rubber duck.
I'm afraid it looked rather ridiculous, but it was all I could think of.
Oh, don't worry. Being a playwright, it's not the first time I've been given the bird. However, it's certainly the first time I have welcomed it with both arms.
Jonathan, you realize the significance of this business?
The significance?
It was done deliberately.
That's what I've been trying to tell him.
It was an attempt to drown me.
You? By whom?
Hart. You know how he feels towards me.
But,
all right. Did you... Well, let me tell you. As I went down to the pool, I glanced up at the front of the house, and I saw him watching me through the first floor window, the one above the front door.
But my dear Nick, he...
was watching me. He saw me go down wearing that cape. He didn't see Mandrake go down wearing the other cape, because he left by the west door. It was Hart shoved you overboard, Mandrake, and he thought he was doing me in. Hart!
You are better now, Mr. Mandrake.
Oh, excuse me, Aubrey.
Thank you, Nick.
It will be well for you to remain in bed today, perhaps. You've had a little shock. As we brought you back to the house, you declared repeatedly that you had been pushed into the pool deliberately.
I'm quite convinced of it.
Then it would perhaps be as well if I set your mind at rest on that matter. No attempt was made wittingly upon you, Mr. Mandrake. It was a case of mistaken identity.
Oh, good God.
The person who made this attack believed that he was making it upon me.
Phew! My dear Hart, what put that strange notion into your head?
It is to me quite evident that Nicholas Compline mistook you for myself.
Forgive me, Dr. Hart. That's a little hard to swallow. I am lame, I wear a heavy boot, I use a stick. You can't mistake a man with a club foot.
In the snow?
Apart from which, Compline waved to me from the pavilion as I reached the poolside. There's no doubt he recognized me. And it was he who threw me your cape to wear, so it's impossible he should have thought you were inside.
There is an explanation that seems to have occurred to nobody.
Uh-huh.
I have an identical cloak. Is it not at least possible that someone might have thought it amusing to watch me flounder in my own pool?
Who?
Well... it might be argued almost every member of my house party.
And what effect did this involuntary dip of yours have on the rest of the house party?
I can answer that. It cast a blight over everything. Not that it had been going of a swing before. Mrs. Compline took to her bed with a bad cold. Lady Hersey and Jonathan seemed to be having a row in the library. Dr. Hart and Madame Lister were doing the same in the boudoir. And Nicholas was sulking in the smoking room.
William?
He and I had a snorter of a row over his harping on about the bet with Nicholas.
He said some pretty offensive things about Nicholas and me, so I broke off the engagement.
I see.
Poor William. He was very upset. His mother had accused him of pushing Aubrey into the pool, thinking it was Nicholas.
Mistaken identity yet again.
Tell me, Miss Wynne, who was at the poolside when Mandrake was pulled out?
It would be quicker to tell you who wasn't. Mrs. Compline, Lady Hersey, and Madame Lisa.
You say there was snow on the lawn. I suppose neither of you particularly noticed the footprints.
Well, I noticed Aubrey's.
One could hardly miss them.
Don't be so defensive. Mr. Alain, there were several sets of footprints leading from the house, and all large. I know, because I stepped in them. It was snowing quite heavily by then, and I found it easier going.
You left no footmarks of your own?
I don't think so.
Strange.
Why do you say that?
Well, I'm damned if I know how I came to notice them, but I did as they brought me back up those unspeakable steps.
Notice what?
A row of footprints running from the house as far as the top of the terrace and turning back again. Small ones. I rather assumed they were Cloris's, since none of the other ladies was present.
Well, they weren't.
Oh, hello.
Why the hell is she sliding about like this? How much further, James?
More than 5 miles.
Good. If the snow's frozen hard all the way, I believe we'll do it.
What is it, James?
We'll be drifting up along, I reckon.
Drifting?
Damn, she's doing it again. I'm going to have a look at those chains.
No, don't ease, sir. I'll see. Oh, right.
No sign of it letting up.
The rector said it wouldn't.
I suppose we will get through.
Now, Cloris, keep your pecker up.
Yes.
What's happened next? Everyone was quarreling or sulking. Then what?
Well, Nicholas suddenly announced in a rather high voice that he must get back to his HQ at Great Chipping. He said he'd received an urgent summons by telephone. But that wasn't very plausible, because by that time the lines were down.
So what were his motives, do you think, for wanting to leave?
Well, he was frightened.
Of Hart?
Yes. He was convinced he was trying to kill him. He asked Jonathan for the use of the car, and when it was pointed out that he'd never get through to Great Chipping by road because of the deep drifts, he set off on foot.
It's more than 10 miles. He could never make it.
So Jonathan and William and James Bewling set out after him and found him spread-eagled and half buried in a drift. They brought him back, covered in snow, quite furious and muttering that he'd have been safer crossing Cloudyfold on foot in the dark than spending another night at Highfold.
So he really did think that Hart was trying to kill him?
Yes. I'm afraid he's a complete coward. Mind you, later that evening, it began to look as if he was right. Because as we were dressing for dinner...
Oh! Oh, no.
It was Nicholas. By the time I got to his bedroom, they were all gathered in the door.
Nicky! This is frightful!
Oh, my poor boy!
He said someone was after him, and by gum, he was right.
Shut up, William! What happened?
It was a booby trap, Mandrake. The bust of Buddha from that niche in the passage. It's solid brass.
It was balanced on the top of the door.
Oh, my God.
I went to push open the door. It wasn't quite shut, and as I shoved, it opened quickly, and I sort of jumped back, and the thing thudded down. It caught my arm.
Oh, poor darling. His arm's broken. Let me look at it.
I don't think so, Mother. It was a glancing blow, but it's damn sore.
It could have killed you.
Yes. Mother. Hurt.
Oh, he can't move it.
Perhaps you'd like me.
No, thank you, Hart. Keep off. You've done enough already.
This has become too much. Too much, I tell you.
I don't think it's broken, Nick.
It's bloody sore.
We can do with a first aid kit.
I'll get one. Mrs. Pouting is fully equipped.
It's Hart, Bill. He's probably mad. He's got this bee in his bonnet about me and Madame Lisa.
Well, there's nothing in it, of course, but Francis is a desperately jealous man.
No, it's not that, is it? Nicky, it's got nothing to do with her. You found out about him, haven't you?
Sandra!
Nick, my dear, you know. You care.
Sandra, don't.
Hersey knows what I'm talking about. Do you see what's happened, Hersey? Nick has found out and threatened to expose him. So Hart is trying to kill him.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I.
What is all this?
Oh, this woman is evidently insane. What mystery is she making?
Dr. Hart is the surgeon who operated on my face. Dr. Franz Hart of Vienna. I recognized him instantly.
I know nothing. Nothing.
The bloody swine. My God, the bloody swine.
I don't... William, where are you going? Come back.
Save your breath, Jonathan. You won't stop him now.
Hart had better look out.
But my... What are we to do? Shall we dine?
Look, oh, pesky chain on off-hand wheels carried away, sir. That's why she's been
dead. In it's freezing.
Well, I'm telling you,
well, I suppose there's nothing for it but to struggle on without it.
Mr. Allen.
Yes?
I just remembered something. Oh, I don't know if it's important.
I'm listening.
After Jonathan, William and James had gone off to rescue Nick from the snowdrift, Mrs. Comfine suddenly announced she wanted to go outside and see if they were coming. Lady Hersey and I tried to talk her out of it, but she insisted, saying she hadn't been out of the house all day.
So?
Well, when I went up to get her overcoat out of the wardrobe for her, it was wet.
Was it?
It may not be significant.
No, I'm glad you told me, Miss Wynne. Thank you.
But when are we going to get to the murder?
We're almost there, Mr. Allain. We're almost there.
Madame Lissa, Dr. Hart and Mrs. Compline begged to be excused from dinner, which left the rest of us free to speak our minds.
What's the law about attempted murder?
Bill.
No, I'm sorry, Hersey. A man who could do that to Mother's face could do anything.
You're barking up the wrong tree. It's because of Elisa Lissa.
Oh, rot, Nicky.
I was in her room just prior to that business with the Buddha. The fellow's off his head with jealousy.
God, I'll expose him. I'm damn well going to light him out.
Oh, no, you're not. This is my house and I will not have it.
Jonathan, you must declare yourself. Do you or do you not think Dr. Hart is out for Nick's blood?
I am regretfully forced to that conclusion, yes. Who else are we to suspect?
It must be Hart. He has a motive. Maybe two.
Yes, and at the time of the Buddha business, the rest of us have alibis.
I was with Elisa.
And I was with you, Jonathan, in the smoking room, doing a sketch of the trophies.
That's right, you were.
I was with Sandra, in her room, trying to calm her down. It has to be Hart.
Oh, what the hell does it matter? Our charming plastic surgeon is probably thinking up a new death trap on the third time lucky principle now. What are we going to do about
we
him?
We can't give him in charge. The snow...
Then how do we protect Nicholas?
What am I to do? I can't lock up Dr. Hart.
Well, I think the least you could do is have it out with him. See what sort of defense he can make.
Yes, I think that's an excellent idea.
Oh, very well, but Mandrake must come with me. Dr. Hart, it won't do, you know. This last affair with the Buddha could have inflicted a fatal injury to Nicholas Compline.
I made no attack on Nicholas Compline. That I am at enmity with him, I admit, but no attack. I should leave this house immediately, but since this isn't possible, I propose to remain here in this boudoir or in my room until I am able to leave.
Dr. Hart, what were you doing during the 10 to 15 minutes before Nicholas cried out?
I was in this room. I remained here until it was time to dress. Then I went upstairs to my room, bathed, and was dressing when I heard him scream. I put on my dinner jacket and went out into the passage where I found all of you grouped about the doorway to his room.
Do you know where Nicholas was when the trap was being set for him?
No.
He tells us he was with Madame Lisa, in her room.
I did not know where he was.
Have you seen this paper before?
What is it?
It is the piece of paper you passed to Nicholas while we were playing charter. It reads, you are warned, keep on.
I have never seen it before, never.
Look at it. Take it.
I will not touch it. This is a trap. My fingerprints...
I merely wish you to compare the handwriting to that on your acceptance to my invitation for the weekend.
No.
Then allow me to point out that you use a script which retains its continental flavor. The leg of the German K is usually prolonged. Here we have a K in kind invitation. We have the same K in keep in the charter note.
I know nothing about it.
No, no, that will not do.
Oh, God, I can endure this no longer. I must insist that you leave me alone.
Very well. And I must insist that you remain in this room or your bedroom. And what is more...
I have already agreed
what
to do so.
What is more, I am armed, Dr. Hart.
Good God,
and I'm still sure that Nicholas is also armed. I wish you good night. Aubrey?
I'll stay a while longer, Jonathan, if Dr. Hart permits.
As you wish. No good will come of it.
Ach, Mandrake. I'm near breaking point. I'm torn by the most terrible of all emotions, and I cannot fight against it. Do you two believe I am the author of these attacks on Compline?
Yes, I'm afraid I do.
Ah.
Look, I stayed because... I think you should know you must beware of William. He's after your blood.
Because of what I did to his mother, he's found out.
Yes.
William is very protective towards his mother. There's no knowing what he might do.
Thank you for the warning, Mandrake. Now, I entreat you to go.
Hart, what is it that you can't fight against? Jealousy?
If only I could be certain.
Of what?
That it is all lies, that he is her lover. When she denies it, I cannot help half believing her. I wish so much to believe. And then I see the look of boredom in her eyes, a look of weariness, contempt, and with that comes the memory of the glances I surprised between them, and I'm caught in the toils of hell.
If you feel so strongly, why did you come here?
To know the worst. Watch us and find out, she said, it is nothing. And then, when I saw him with all the airs of complacent ownership, laughing at me...
Look, Hart, it's none of my business, but if you're so certain, why not make a clean break? Is she worth it? Let her go.
Let her go? She is my wife, Mandrake. We live separate lives for professional reasons, but Elise is my wife.
God in Himmel, must I be tortured by that intolerable noise?
The Complines are listening to the wireless next door in the smoking room, that's all.
Compline! Turn it off! I insist that you turn it off!
Did you say something, Hart?
Turn off that noise!
You go to hell! If my brother and I choose to listen to the wireless, we'll bloody well listen to it!
Intolerable. This is all quite intolerable.
Listen, Hart. Stay here, help yourself to a whiskey, and keep well clear of the Complines, all right?
You felt sorry for him?
Yes, I did. Though I thought him guilty as hell, everyone did.
Mm.
When I joined the others in the library, we were trying to decide what on earth we could do. Hart was clearly crazed with jealousy and out to revenge himself on Nicholas, whatever the cost. Oh, I'm sorry, we've hit a snowdrift.
I told you we'd get another.
Everybody all right?
Yes, I reckon so.
Oh, the engine won't start.
Yeah. You got it cranking, Daniel, sir?
In the boot.
Yeah. Right, then. Do you leave that to me? Don't you worry about the thing, though.
It's getting worse, isn't it? And it'll be dark before very long.
Any more tea in the flask?
It's all gone, I'm afraid. Oh, dear.
Oh, darling, Cloris, I implore you not to cry.
Oh, it must be the shock or something.
Oh, yes.
I've been so miserable about William and Nicky. I so wanted to be rid of them both.
Well,
and now I...
Take my hand.
I'm sorry, Mr. Alley.
Oh, don't worry about me.
Oh, please don't be nice to me. I feel like a sweep. It was foul of me to get engaged to William on the rebound. Because that's what it was. I knew all the time what I was up to.
Sweet.
Oh, that's no use, sir. Can't get no so much as a tiny gurgle out of it.
I'm sure you did your best, James. Question is, what do we do now?
Well, sir, I've been thinking. And that's not more than a mile or so now to Penny Quick Cottage cross country. And I reckon I could make it on foot and get help from old Matthew Waring and his sons.
Sounds like a good plan to me. There's no chance of all of us making it on foot, is there?
Oh, no chance at all, I shouldn't wonder, sir.
Good luck, James.
Thank you, miss. Look like I shall need it. Cheery bye.
Bye, James. Bye.
I feel quite deserted.
Hold my hand.
Yes.
The murder.
Yes. Well, we were all sitting in the library. Jonathan, Cloris, Hersey and myself. Wondering what we should do about Hart. His motive for attacking Nicholas was all the stronger. Now we knew Madame Lissa to be his wife. Then Nicholas joined us from the smoking room. He was looking glum. He'd utterly failed to cheer William up and had finally left him in the smoking room. Sounds ridiculous, but we decided we'd all like to listen to the news on the wireless as a sort of counter-irritant. Except we didn't want to bother William, and Jonathan only had the one wireless, and that was in the smoking room. Then the young footman came in with a tray of drinks, and we all had large ones.
Well, Jonathan said, would William like one? And Nick opened the door to the smoking room and asked him. It seemed William declined, so then Nick asked if he'd mind switching on the wireless, because we all wanted to hear the news.
Mm.
Obviously, William didn't mind because Nick glanced back over his shoulder in our direction and winked. second later, the wireless came to life.
It was Ham's knees and bumps of Daisy, or the last part of it. Then came the news.
It was very dull. Some well-known authority on Polish folk music was now known to be a prisoner of the Germans in Warsaw.
That's right. Well, after a few minutes or so, Hersey poured a drink for William and took it over to the smoking room.
I saw her open the door, look inside, and then stop. She turned her head towards us and her lips moved, but no sound came out. She was as white as a sheet. I felt a sort of icy sensation close like a hand about my heart. Nick cried out, "My God, what's happened?" And Hersey went over to him and took his hands in hers. "He's killed William," she said. "Oh, Nick, he's killed William."
It was William that was murdered. I'd assumed all along it was... But never mind, go on.
Nick, Jonathan and I went into the smoking room. William was sitting in a low chair beside the wireless. He was bent double. His face was between his knees and his hands were close to his shoes. It looked almost as if he was staring at a small object that lay between his feet. There was a cleft in the back of his head. There was no doubt that he was dead. I felt abominably sick. As I turned away, my foot struck against a flattish, spatulate object made of stone that was lying on the floor. Jonathan noticed it at the same time. "It's a Mary," he said.
"What?"
"A Maori bludgeon from New Zealand. It hung on the wall."
"The murder weapon?"
"Yes, yes. It was stained with blood. Hart must have come in."
"Why Hart? He had nothing against William."
"William had plenty against him."
"Oh, Elaine, it was clearly another case of mistaken identity. The room was dimly lit. Hart believed Nicholas was still in the smoking room, saw a figure in uniform, and, well, did what he did."
"I see. So what did you do?"
"Went up and tackled Hart. He was asleep in bed. He'd taken some Veronal and needed a lot of waking. He denied everything, of course. I confiscated the Veronal in case he got any queer ideas, and we locked him in his room. We should have done so before."
"This Veronal
was what Sandra Compline took when she heard the news about William. That and a large quantity of aspirin, which nobody knew she had."
"You gave her the Veronal?"
"Yes. Well, Lady Hersey did. Half the prescribed dosage. Seemed safe enough and sufficient to get Sandra off to sleep. But then Hersey left the rest of the bottle on the bedside table. God.
It wasn't your fault, Aubrey."
"I should have known better. Well, so much had happened, and in so short a time..."
"Did Mrs. Compline leave a note?"
"Yes. But only Nick knows what it said. He read it and stuffed it in his pocket. Anyway, the maid found her this morning when she went up with her breakfast. Hart was persuaded to examine Sandra. He and Hersey tried artificial respiration, but to very little effect. It was then we decided we must reach a chemist and enlist some professional help. Yours."
"Yes."
"Ooh, freezing."
"Yes, me too."
"Right then. It's no good perishing of cold in here. Time for some action."
"Why, that's right.
Got any shovels aboard?"
"One, in the boot."
"Then you and I'll take turns to use it. See if we can get this car out of the drift. Come on."
Right.
"Question, Mandrake."
"Yes?"
"Why do you suppose Mrs. Compline tried to take her own life?"
"I've thought about that. I can only assume she felt guilt about William's death."
"Guilt? Why guilt?"
"Because she feared it was on her account that Hart killed him. She was convinced the enmity between her sons and Hart was because of that dreadful operation on her face."
"You say she cared very little for William."
"That's what Jonathan said. That's how it looked to me." "Look, shall I take over with the shovel again?"
"No need now, I think." "Where's the starting handle?"
"I'll get it."
"Is there anything I can do?"
"You could try praying. We're going to attempt to start the car."
"Tell me, Miss Wynne, did you get on with Mrs. Compline?"
"I would have liked to be friends with her, but she hated me from the beginning."
"Why?"
"First, because I was engaged to Nick, and secondly, and even more violently, I suppose, because I jilted him for William."
"She doted on Nicholas."
"Oh, yes. She thought him perfect." "And she had a fantastic hatred for anyone who made him look shabby."
"Here's the starting handle."
"Leave that to me. You sit in and keep her going if she starts."
"Right, I'll do my best."
Cross your fingers, Miss Wynn. Here goes. Huh? Nearly. Second time lucky. This is the smoking room?
Yes. Nothing's been touched, except they thought it decent to cover William with a sheet.
Yes, I quite understand. And this is William Compline. I don't imagine he knew anything about it. Caught in a little blitzkrieg of his own, poor chap. That's the murder weapon?
Yes, it hung up on the wall there with the other weapons.
Now, if Hart took it down from its place on the wall, he'd have been in full view of William as he fiddled with the knobs on that radio.
Yes, I suppose he would.
And he saw no cause for alarm.
Hart might have taken it down earlier.
Perhaps. And that door leads to...
the Green Boudoir.
To which Hart was banished. Yes. And this one? Where does this lead to?
To the library.
Woodworm.
Pardon?
A small hole here in the door jamb. Looks like woodworm. Where's my pocket lens? Perhaps not.
I'm awfully sorry to have kept you waiting. I'm Jonathan Royal.
Roderick Allen.
How do you do? I do hope Aubrey has been looking
after
you.
Yes, indeed. Interesting room, Mr. Royal.
Oh, it's a terrible room now. It will never be the same again.
I shall need to take some photographs.
Yes, why not? It can't disturb him now. I was very fond of William. Oh, what a dreadful business, and all my fault. This ridiculous party. What is it, Aubrey?
Seem to have got something stuck in the sole of my boot. It won't come out. Yes, it will. It's a drawing pin.
Drawing pin? May I see?
Yes. Here it is. It's just a drawing pin, Mr. Allain. It can't possibly have any significance. William was sketching in here yesterday. Probably belonged to him. But surely it's obvious what happened. Hart crept in from the boudoir, took down the Mary, and struck William on the head with it, believing him to be Nicholas. In the light of Hart's earlier unsuccessful attempts at the pool, and with the Buddha, and the threat he made when we were playing charter, I should have thought that crystal clear.
Oh, yes, thank you for reminding me. I should like to see that slip of paper from the charter game, if you still have it.
Of course I still have it, Mr. Allain. It's evidence.
When? It's convenient, then. Please. An impressive array of trophies you have here.
Yes.
This fishing rod.
It belonged to my grandfather. He caught a 4.5-pounder with it just above Trotts Bridge in 1900. It's hung there above the mantel ever since.
Escaping the attention of your housemaids, it seems.
Yes, dust, I see.
Yes, except for the line itself. No dust at all on that. Shouldn't there be a fly?
Yes, there should. A red and green Alexander.
Have the lines been cut through? Green end.
Forgive me, Chief Inspector, but I don't quite
know. What about this?
What?
Interesting.
What is it, Elaine?
Here in the hearth. Fine thread of ash.
Isn't that what one would expect in a hearth?
Of course, Mr. Roy, of course. I'll just photograph it, if I may.
How is Mrs. Compline, Jonathan?
Oh, they think she's going to die.
Who's with her now?
Hart. A monstrous arrangement, I know, but what else could I do?
Is he alone?
Most certainly not. Lady Hersey Amblington, an experienced VAD, has never left Sandra's side. There is something else, Mr. Allain.
Yes?
This. It contains the note Sandra left for Nicholas. No one has read it but he. He placed it in this envelope in the presence of Lady Hersey and myself. I now hand it to you.
Very correct, sir.
Well, one is a J.P. after all.
Now, perhaps I should read it now.
But take care. Fingerprints.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Thank you again for reminding me, Mr. Royal. I shall be careful.
May we know what's in it, Elaine?
I don't see why not. My darling, you must not let this make you very sad. I think that during these last hours I have been insane. I cannot write a confession. What I am going to do will make things clear enough. All my life, everything I have done has been for you. Even this last terrible thing is for you. My last thoughts and prayers are for you, my dearest Nicholas. And then she signed it with her full name, Sandra Mary Compline.
Confession? She's confessing to William's murder? Impossible. Quite impossible.
It doesn't make any sense.
I must talk to Dr. Hart immediately.
He cannot leave his patient.
Then I'll see him upstairs, if you'll kindly lead the way.
I leave you to it then, Mr. Alley.
Thank you. Is she deeply unconscious, Dr. Hart?
Profound coma. I have done everything possible by way of treatment, but...
Was the stuff from the chemist of any use?
Oh, she isn't any better.
I wish you to record the treatment. I am in a dangerous position. I need to protect myself.
At the moment, Dr. Hart, I'm more concerned with your patient. Is there the smallest hope of recovery?
In my opinion, none.
How long?
Not very long, I think.
I think I should tell Nicholas, if that's all right.
Yes, Lady Hersey.
Thank you.
Dr. Hart, I have some questions to put to you. Will you answer them?
Why not?
First, did you push Mr. Mandrake into the pool?
No, I did not.
Did you write and pass to Nicholas Compline the charter form bearing the words, "You are warned, keep off"?
I did not, nor did I remove the putter from the passage and place it as a booby trap above his door.
One final question, Dr. Hart. Did you kill William Compline?
No.
Everyone in this house believes that you did.
Yes.
You seem very calm about it.
You mean that I'm not afraid? No, not now. I am an Austrian refugee and a Jew who became a naturalized Briton. I have developed a good nose for justice. I have learned when and when not to be terrified. I am, as you might say, a kind of barometer of terror. At this moment, I am quite normal. I respect British justice. I do not believe that I should be found guilty of a murder I did not commit.
It would help if you had an alibi.
Alas.
Tell me what happened last evening after you had shouted at Nicholas Compline about the din from the wireless and Aubrey Mandrake had left the room.
I took his advice and poured myself a stiff whiskey, trying to pull myself together. I was beginning to feel more recovered when the wireless noises started up again, not loudly this time, more furtive. It sounded like Compline was fiddling with the dial control because there were snatches of music and then static, bursts of German and then French. I found it equally intolerable. I was so much on edge. I rushed at the communicating door, intending to have it out with Compline once and for all. But the door was locked, and the key was on the other side.
Locked?
Yes. He must have locked it after our earlier exchange, so I cursed him at the top of my voice, threw the door, and, flying from the torment, went upstairs to my room.
But nobody saw you.
Oh, yes.
Hmm?
As I crossed the hall to the foot of the stairs, I passed the new footman with his tray of glasses. He went into the library. And as I reached the halfway landing, he came out again and began locking up in the hall. He will tell you that I did not enter the smoking room.
Well, Dr. Hart, we shall see. You're Thomas the footman?
Yes, sir.
Come in, Thomas. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
Certainly, sir.
I'd like to ask you about the events of last evening.
Yes, sir. If I can help, sir.
You took a tray of glasses to the library. Did you see anyone as you crossed the hall?
The foreign gentleman, sir. He came out of the green boudoir heading for the stairs. And as I came out of the library a few seconds later, sir, I saw him up on the landing on his way to his room.
How long did you stay in the hall?
I locked the front doors, Made up the fire, tidied the tables.
Yes. How long might that have taken? Several minutes?
About that, yes.
And then you returned to the servants' quarters?
Not directly, sir. No, I heard this music on the wireless.
Oh, what sort of music?
Bumps a daisy, sir. And
oh,
I...
Yes?
I went through the movements, sir. Hands, knees, and bumps a daisy. You know.
Yes, yes, I know.
In time to the music, sir. I don't know why. I'm sure it just came over me. Mind you, I didn't do it for very long, sir, because it was halfway through when I started, and then the news came on, and I went below stairs.
Think carefully, Thomas. During the time you were dancing, did anybody at all, come into the hall?
No, sir. I assure you they didn't.
Would you swear that in a court of law?
I'd swear, sir.
Thank you, Thomas. That'll be all. Sorry.
Yes, sir?
The maid who was looking after Mrs. Compline, would you tell her I'd like a word?
It's all gone so awfully quiet, Aubrey.
Yes.
Sinister, somehow. Like the quiet before a storm. What's he doing now?
Alain, I think he's on his own in the library. He's interviewed everyone in the house. Cloris.
Hmm?
May I kiss you?
Ah, the indoor sport idea, I see.
Not sport, Cloris. I've fallen in love with you. Head over heels.
I'm really not at all clever. I put up a bluff. You'd despise me no end if you knew me better.
Are you in love with Nicholas Compline?
Nick? Oh, no. I fell for his line of stuff, that's all. I couldn't help myself. He's got it, as they say. Something in his makeup. But no, I'm cured of Nicholas. Forever.
Oh, good. Cloris, I have a confession. I wasn't christened Aubrey Mandrake. My real name is Stanley Footling.
Oh, dear.
I've never told anyone else.
I shall take that as a compliment.
Not even the Footlings of Fifeshire, or even furniture polish. Just Footling.
Oh, who cares? I won't shrink from you because of your name, if that's what you're afraid of.
Oh, darling, Cloris.
So that's where you both are. I should have known I'd find you together.
Hello, Jonathan.
Sad news, I'm afraid, and very upsetting. Sandra Compline has passed away.
Oh, dear.
Still, no point in getting maudlin. Elaine wants to see us all in the library. Now.
Ladies and gentlemen, before we go any further, I must explain that I've arrived at a definite conclusion in this case.
You've arrested Hart.
No, Mr. Compline. Dr. Hart is quite innocent in this affair.
Innocent?
May I proceed? Thank you. I have asked you here in order that we may go over the events immediately preceding the discovery of William Compline's body in the next room. I have not asked those members of the party who are upstairs to be present, Dr. and Mrs. Hart. They cannot help us. You have all heard of police reconstructions. Well, this very short experiment may be regarded as a reconstruction, and if I am at fault in the smallest detail, I ask you to put me right. Is that quite clear?
You want us to do everything we did last night?
If you have no objection.
Very well.
Thank you. Now, the time is a minute or so before the crime was discovered. You, Mr. Compline, are next door in the smoking room with your brother, and the door connecting that room with the boudoir is locked on the smoking room side. The door from here to the smoking room is shut, as you can see. So, would you please take up your positions?
I was sitting here, opposite Jonathan.
Good, then would you please do so?
We were sitting here.
Oh, yes, that's right, yes.
I was in there.
Then, would you mind? There's no one in there now.
Yes, very well, if I must. I trust this won't take long.
Not long, Mr. Compline, no. What happened next?
We talked about Nicholas and Hart having a row over the wireless.
And how long did that last, Lady Hurst?
About a minute. Wasn't longer, was it?
About a minute, yes.
And then Nicholas came in.
Good. You can come in now, Mr. Conplan.
This is not at all pleasant for Nick, Mr. Elaine.
Nor indeed for the rest of us.
I'm all right. Let's get on with it. Thank you, Mr. Conplan. Did you come straight in?
I don't know.
I do. Yes, he came in and shut the door, pausing for a second with his hand on the knob.
That's right, he shut the door.
Then please shut the door, Mr. Conplan.
Perhaps one of you would be kind enough as to enlighten me precisely what I did next.
You made a face as if to say Bill was still in a mood.
And I did thumbs up and you did thumbs down, yes. You remember?
And then you sat down in that chair by the door.
There's the chair, Mr. Conplan. Would you please sit in it?
Very well.
Now what?
Jonathan asked me to ring for drinks, but before we could do so, we had a clink of glasses outside
the
door.
Ah, yes, for drinks.
Yes.
Thomas! Thank you, Thomas. Set it down on the table just as you did last evening.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
Imagine Thomas is now out there, tidying the hall, drawing curtains, locking doors.
Oh, I'm not enjoying this.
Hart, having earlier heard strange noises from the wireless and found the door to the smoking room locked, has left the boudoir and crossed the hall. He has mounted the stairs and reached the half landing heading for his room. Thomas has seen him go.
In fact, I'm hating it.
Did you have your drinks?
Yes. Jonathan poured them out and...
And I said, what about William?
Compline stuck his head in at the smoking room door and called, coming for a drink, Bill.
Will you please do that, Mr. Compline?
Yes. If I must.
And call, please.
I can't. I'm sorry.
Very well. You called, coming in for a drink, Bill, and he replied...
I think he just grunted. And then I asked him to turn on the news.
What exactly did you say?
I can't remember.
Well, I can. You said, do you mind switching on the wireless? It's time for the news and we'd like to hear it. Then there was a slight pause.
I heard Bill walk across to the wireless. And I called out, thanks.
And then?
And then we heard the wireless, a popular song.
God in heaven! Get out of my way!
Mr. Conplan, that'll do. Don't try anything. Fox, Bailey, take him away and charge him.
Come along, sir. Easy now. That's a good fella.
Don't look at me like that, all of you. I didn't do it. You can't prove anything against me. It was Hart.
That's enough, sir. Come along now.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, the reconstruction ends.
Oh, my God.
Well, James, good morning.
Hello, James.
Morning, sir. Morning, miss.
None the worse for your ordeal?
Well, as bad as all that, sir.
Oh, great.
My old auntie, Miss Fancy Bowling, buys at a cottage along to Hogs Corner.
Yeah.
Her's 91 years of age, and so cantankerous an old masterpiece, ever you did say.
Yes, well, I think...
Howsomever, after I left you, I wasn't getting nowhere because of nice notice.
Yeah.
So I turned about thinking to go back to the car.
Ah.
And bless me, there it was, chanking and skittering along a little twiddling leg of high fold. So I called in on my auntie. Oh, she were pleased to have punched.
Well, we really got to go.
And when they two policemen arrived from London, I direct them best way to Highfold.
Yeah.
No, bless you. Twasn't as bad as all that.
Yeah.
Bye now.
Yes. Bye, Jane.
Bye.
Oh, hello, you two. And where are you off to?
Morning, Elaine. We thought we'd like to go up to London for a change of scene, if that's all right with you.
Oh, so long as you're back by Wednesday for the inquest.
Oh, we promise. Mr. Elaine.
Miss Wynne.
Would you care to unravel some knots?
What knots?
Well, to begin with, did Nicholas shove me into the pool?
He did.
But he recognized me. He waved to me from the pavilion.
Because he recognized you, Mandrake. He'd already decided to stage a series of apparent attempts on his own life based on an idea of mistaken identity. The incident at the pool was the first. Then he wrote himself a threatening message in a crude imitation of Hart's handwriting. And finally he rigged up the booby trap with the Buddha.
Which went wrong and landed on his own.
Exactly.
But why? Why should he do all these things?
Eliza Lisser was an extremely mercenary lady. She was in love with Nicholas, but divorce was out of the question. A young man with little money would never persuade her to embark on a damaging scandal, but a young man with a large estate and fine prospects. How different.
She encouraged Nick to kill William.
Oh, no, she'd never risk that. No. No, she really thought that Hart had done that. No doubt she planned to wait a discreet period after her husband had been hanged and then marry Nicholas, and she will now strain every nerve to disassociate herself from him. But she will not succeed.
And Hart?
Now he knows the full truth about his wife, he'll have nothing more to do with her.
What will happen to him?
In a little while, there'll be a great need for surgeons in England. I think perhaps he may yet do more admirable work than the patching up of faded women's faces.
Yes. One more thing. How on earth did Nicholas manage that business with the wireless?
Well, you remember the fishing rod above the mantelpiece in the smoking room?
Yes.
When he was supposedly sulking, Nicholas cut off a length of the line with the fly on the end of it. He hooked the fly into the screw hole of the wireless volume control, passed the line under the waveband knob and over the tuning control, forming a sort of smooth-running pulley, and fixed the other end of the line to the library door jamb with a drawing pin.
Good heavens!
All he had to do then was to tweak the line and the hook pulled the volume control from zero to fairly loud, while the line playing over the tuning control tuned it to the station. Mm. As the hook reached the bottom of the circuit, it fell out.
Genius! Oh,
but anyone could have fixed that.
Only after William was dead. Otherwise he would have noticed it, wouldn't he? No. Nicholas killed his brother, rigged the trick with the wireless, came out and shut the door. Later, he opened the door, held a one-sided conversation with William, asked for the news, tweaked the line at the door jamb end, and waited for someone to go into the smoking room.
But what happened to the line?
Well, when you and Royal were examining William's body, Nick had only to stoop and pull the line towards him. It appears that the drawing pin jerked away and he had no opportunity to hunt for it. In fact, you found it, Mandrake, with the sole of your boot.
That's right.
Yes. Then he gathered up the line and put it on the fire. Unfortunately for him, I found its trace among the ashes.
And the hook?
Ah, yes, the hook. That actually leads us to Mrs. Compline. They were her footprints you saw, Mandrake, when you were being helped back from the pool. She'd come out, seen Nicholas push you, and then hastily returned to her room.
Which accounts for the wet overcoat.
Yes. She was seen by her maid, looking terribly upset. At the time, she might have thought it was a dangerous piece of horseplay. But what was she to think when Nicholas accused Hart of having done it, thinking you, Mandrake, to be Nicholas himself? And what was she to think of the booby trap, when again Nicholas accused Hart? And finally, when Nicholas went to her on Saturday evening and told her Hart had killed William in mistake for himself, what was she to think then? With her secret knowledge, how could she escape the terrible conclusion that Nicholas had killed his brother?
Poor woman. Little wonder she took her own life.
Yes. Even there, in the note she left, she confessed to William's murder in a roundabout sort of way. She couldn't bring herself to say so in so many words, but Nicholas could read between the lines that she knew he had done it. And so could I. But you asked how he disposed of the hook. Well, Mrs. Compline wore a tweed hat with a yellow and black salmon fly pinned to the hat band. When I looked yesterday evening, there were two flies. The second was a red and green Alexander and rather the worse for wear. Nicholas put it there after he had told his mother of William's death.
Oh.
A rather mad thing to do, wasn't it?
All homicides want to get rid of the corpus delicti. And he was banking on his mother not noticing the second fly and the shock of William's death. No doubt he planned to dispose of it more permanently later.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Elaine.
Thank you, Miss Wynne, for all your help.
Come along, darling. Goodbye, Elaine. We'll see you on Wednesday.
I shouldn't go now if I were you. They're just taking Nicholas to the police station.
Has he confessed?
Yes.
Then what will happen to him? Will he... Oh, God.
Darling.
I should be there now to see him go.
Jonathan and Lady Hersey are doing that. Visit him later if you wish. Now isn't the time, believe me.
Oh, there, I got you. There, darling.
Come along now, then, Mr. Cobblight. Step lively, the car's waiting outside.
Here they come.
Would you rather I went away, Jonathan?
It's for your sake, Hussey.
Then I'll stay.
Ah, Hussey.
Jonathan. I must thank you for a quite splendid party. A great success, eh? It must have surpassed your wildest dreams.
Nicholas, if you wish me to see your solicitor or do anything else that I am able to do, you have only to send instructions.
There is one thing. Please. You can stop them hanging me.
No, you don't want to be talking like that, sir. Come along.
Stop them hanging me! Stop them hanging me!
Percy?
Yes?
If I told you I've learnt my lesson, would you... could you forgive me?
No more parties?
Oh, not like this one, no. It's been a horrible nightmare. I think perhaps I do these things because I'm a bit lonely.
Too much time and too much money.
Yes. Oh, Percy, what am I to do?
What you've got to do is to think about other things. Get a new interest.
Oh, Percy.
That was Death and the Dancing Footman by Niall Marsh, which was dramatized for radio by Alan Downer. With Nigel Graham as Chief Detective Inspector Roderick Alleyne, Lawrence Payne as Jonathan Royle, and Stephen Pacey as Aubrey Mandrake. Sandra Compline was played by Avril Clark, William Compline by Stuart Organ, and Nicholas Compline by Stephen Hattersley. Jane Leonard was Cloris Wynne, Alan Downer, Dr. Francis Hart, Natasha Pine, Madame Lissa, Margaret Ward, Lady Hersey Amblington, and Elaine Claxton, Troy Elaine. James Bewling was played by Peter Tottenham, the Reverend Walter Copeland by Sean Prendergast, and Thomas by Brian Hewlett. Death and the Dancing Footman was directed by David Johnston.